Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka with another episode from Sri Aurobindo Essays, Divine and Human. Today, on original thinking. The attitude of mankind towards originality of opinion is marked by a natural hesitation and inconsistency. Admired for its rarity, brilliancy, and potency, yet in practice, and for the same qualities, it is more generally dreaded, ridiculed, or feared. There is no doubt that it tends to disturb what is established. Therefore, tamasic men and tamasic states of society take special pains to discourage independence of opinion. Their watchword is authority. Few societies have been so tamasic, so full of inertia and contentment in increasing narrowness as Indian society in later times. Few have been so eager to preserve themselves in inertia. Few, therefore, have attached so great an importance to authority. Now, every detail of our life has been fixed for us by Shastra, by custom. Every detail of our thought by Scripture and its commentators, but much more oftener by the commentators than by Scripture. Only in one field, that of individual spiritual experience, have we cherished the ancient freedom and originality out of which our past greatness sprang. It is from some new movement in this inexhaustible source that every fresh impulse and rejuvenated strength has arisen. Otherwise, we should long ago have been in the grave where dead nations lie, with Greece and Rome of the Caesars, with Esarhaddon and the Chosroes. You will often hear it said that it was the forms of Hinduism which have given us so much national vitality. Well, I think rather it was its spirit. I'm inclined to give more credit for the secular miracle of our national survival to Shankara, Ramanuja, Nanak, Kabir, Guru Gobind, Chaitanya, Ramdas, and Tukaram than to Raghunandan and the pandits of Nadia and Bhatpara. The result of this well-meaning bondage has been an increasing impoverishment of the Indian intellect, once the most gigantic and original in the world. Hence, certain incapacity, atrophy, impotence have marked our later activities, even at their best. The most striking instance is our continued helplessness in the face of the new conditions and new knowledge imposed on us by recent European contact. We have tried to assimilate. We have tried to reject. We have tried to select. But we have not been able to do any of these things successfully. Successful assimilation depends on mastery. But we have not mastered European conditions and knowledge. Rather, we have been seized, subjugated, and enslaved by them. And successful rejection? That's possible only if we have intelligent possession of that which we wish to keep. Our rejection, too, must be an intelligent rejection. We must reject because we have understood, not because we have failed to understand. But our Hinduism, our old culture, are precisely the possessions we have cherished with the least intelligence. Throughout the whole range of our life, we do things without knowing why we do them. And we believe things without knowing why we believe them. We assert things without knowing what right we have to assert them. Or, at most, it is because some book or some Brahmin enjoins it, because Shankara thinks it, or because someone has so interpreted something that he asserts to be a fundamental scripture of our religion. Nothing is our own. Nothing native to our intelligence, all is derived. As little have we understood the new knowledge. We have only understood what the Europeans want us to think about themselves and their modern civilization. Our English culture, if culture it can be called, has increased tenfold the evil of our dependence instead of remedying it. More even than the other two processes, successful selection requires the independent play of intellect. See, if we only merely receive new ideas and institutions in the light in which they are presented to us, we shall, instead of selecting, imitate blindly, foolishly, inappropriately. If we receive them in the light given by our previous knowledge, which was on so many points nil, we shall as blindly and foolishly reject. Selection demands that we should see things not as the foreigner sees them or as the orthodox pundit sees them, but as they are in themselves. But we have selected at random. We have rejected at random. We have not known how to assimilate or choose. In the upshot, we have merely suffered the European impact, overborne at points, crassly resisting at others, and altogether miserable, enslaved by our environments, able neither to perish nor to survive. We preserve indeed a certain ingenuity and subtlety. We can imitate with an appearance of brightness. We can play plausibly, even brilliantly, with the minutiae of a subject. But we fail to think usefully. We fail to master the life and heart of things. Yet, it is only by mastering the life and heart of things that we can hope, as a nation, to survive. Well, how shall we recover our lost intellectual freedom and elasticity? By reversing, for a time at least, the process by which we lost it, by liberating our minds in all subjects from the thraldom of authority. That is not what reformers in the Anglicized require of us. They ask us, indeed, to abandon authority, to revolt against custom, superstition, and to have free and enlightened minds. But what they mean by these sounding recommendations is that we should renounce the authority of Sayana for the authority of Max Müller, the monism of Shankara for the monism of Haeckel, the written Shastra for the unwritten law of European social opinion, and the dogmatism of Brahmin pandits for the dogmatism of European scientists, thinkers, and scholars. Now, such a foolish exchange of servitude can receive the assent of no self-respecting mind. Let us break our chains, venerable as they are, but let it be in order to be free, free in the name of truth, not in the name of Europe. It would be a poor bargain to exchange our old Indian illuminations, however dark they may have grown to us, for a derivative European enlightenment, or replace the superstitions of popular Hinduism by the superstitions of materialistic science. our first necessity, if India is to survive and do her appointed work in the world, is that the youth of India should learn to think on all subjects, to think independently, fruitfully, going to the heart of things, not stopped by their surface, and free of prejudgments, shearing sophism and prejudice asunder as with a sharp sword, smiting down obscurantism of all kinds as with the mace of Bhima. Let our brains no longer, like European infants, be swathed with swaddling clothes. Let our brains recover the free and unbound motion of the gods. Let them have not only the minuteness, but the wide mastery and sovereignty natural to the intellect of Bharata, and easily recoverable by it, if at once accustoms itself to feel its own power and be convinced of its own worth. If it cannot entirely shake off past shackles, let it at least arise like the infant Krishna bound to the wane, and move forward dragging with it wane and all, and shattering in its progress the twin trees, the twin obstacles to self-fulfillment, blind medieval prejudice, and arrogant modern dogmatism, the old fixed foundations have been broken up. We are tossing in the waters of a great upheaval and change. It is no use clinging to the old ice floes of the past. They will soon melt and leave their refugees struggling in perilous waters. And it is no use landing ourselves in the infirm bog, neither sea nor good dry land of a second-hand Europeanism. We should only die there a miserable and unclean death. No, we must learn to swim and use that power to reach the good vessel of unchanging truth. We must land again on the eternal rock of ages. Let us not either select at random and make a nameless hodgepodge and then triumphantly call it the assimilation of East and West. We must begin by accepting nothing on trust from any source whatsoever, questioning everything, and forming our own conclusions. We need not fear that we shall by that process cease to be Indians or fall into the danger of abandoning Hinduism. India can never cease to be India, or Hinduism to be Hinduism, if we really think for ourselves. It is only if we allow others to think for us that India is in danger of becoming an ill-executed and foolish copy of Europe. We must not begin by becoming partisans, but know before we take our line. So our first business as original thinkers will be to accept nothing and to question everything. That means get rid of all unexamined opinions, old or new. Get rid of all mere habitual sanskaras in the mind and have no preconceived judgments. We will pause at this point today. I think it's a very good place to pause and remember this. Accept nothing and question everything. You've been listening to Essays Divine and Human by Sri Aurobindo, read by Marlenka, signing off for now, and hopefully we'll continue next week.
This is Auroville Radio. Voices from the City of Dome.